Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Just when we thought we'd seen the last of Bin Laden and his boys on video, well, this week, seeming to scoop American intelligence agencies as well as journalistic rivals, CNN turns up a trove of videotape that some believe are part of Osama bin Laden's private collection. The cable giant is rolling out new installments each morning this week, showing everything from the apparent gassing of dogs to instructional videos for would-be bombers, kidnappers, and assassins. As America prosecutes its war on terrorism, probing the corners of the earth for information about those who would attack the West, it seems quite a lot can be learned by just turning on the television. Connection listeners, Democratic Congressman Tom Lantos said upon seeing these images, "Almost a year after the horror of New York, we must be reminded regularly that the terrorists are still around, getting ready with all the power at their command to train new cadres to perpetrate the most horrendous crimes." Well, what lessons do you take from the new Al-Qaeda videotapes? Do Americans need to see and be reminded repeatedly of the potential terrorist threat? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. You can find us at 1-800-423-TALK. With me on the show today, experts who know a lot about Al-Qaeda and the tools of war. Rohan Gunaratne is a research fellow at the Center for the Study of Terrorism and Political Violence at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. He is also author of a number of books, most recently Inside Al-Qaeda, Global Network of Terror. And Jim Walsh is with me. He's a research fellow in the International Security Program at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. Rohan, I want to begin with you because you've been quoted a lot on what you've seen about these tapes as we get to see them one day at a time. I guess you've been through all 64 that came back from Afghanistan. Is that right?
Yes, I examined all the tapes and I made my comments to CNN about each tape.
And this isn't the first Bin Laden video show that you've seen. You've looked at a lot of the tape in the work that you've done studying Al-Qaeda.
Yes, over the years I've examined a number of tapes, including almost all the tapes that have been seized in the United Kingdom.
So, Rohan, what's most notable about the tape that you've seen, the tape that that we're watching now on television?
This is the first time we have come across a number of training tapes. For instance, Al-Qaeda operatives training others to use surface-to-air missiles, or Al-Qaeda experts, bomb-making experts, training others to make TNT, and also the video where Al-Qaeda is conducting experiments with three dogs using chemical agents. And most of the videos we have seen before this, they were mostly promotional and propaganda videos. So in terms of this particular grouping of videos that was recovered by CNN, I firmly believe that this came from the registry or the central repository of Al-Qaeda, because all these videos are of immense security value to Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda does not want these videos to fall into the hands of security forces or other unauthorized persons. And I believe that these videos were carefully, closely guarded by Al-Qaeda until CNN managed to gain access to this collection.
Jim Walsh, you're watching the video along with the rest of us on television. Rohan's talking about the immense security value of that tape to Al-Qaeda. Do the tapes have also immense value to Western intelligence agency, Western governments?
Absolutely. They're of value to analysts, to scholars like myself, and I think to the American public. One of our best protections, the way we can prevent future acts of terrorism, is to learn as much as we can about bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, and others who might imitate his behavior. And the more information we have, the better position we'll be able to find his patterns, his styles, his operational tendencies, and try to prevent the next attack. what these tapes provide is a huge amount of documentation, finely grained documentation about the personalities involved, their way of thinking. Each tape we have is more information about bin Laden and puts us in a better situation to try to prevent future terrorism.
Should we be talking about the question of propaganda and the promotional value that Rohan talked about? Because while Al-Qaeda, as he rightly points out, provided a lot of video prior to this saying, look how strong we are, look how dangerous we are, you could also say this is a pretty crafty bunch, and the tapes of the dogs dying of what seems to be chemical weapons are also a way of saying to the West, look how dangerous we are. Does that assessment need to be a part of what we're looking at?
Well, I think it's a fair question. It's not implausible that some tapes might be leaked in order to affect public opinion. For example, the tapes of the dogs inducing fear. One of the goals of terrorism, aside from the financial or other strategic goals, is to make people wary and fearful. And you could argue that that might have accomplished that task. On the other hand, it seems that most of the response that CNN is getting, according to my friends at the network, is the reaction on the part of the public is those tapes are reason to go to war in Iraq or to continue the war against terrorism. Now, I don't quite see the link between the Al-Qaeda's chemical testing and the attack on Iraq, but what it seems to have done at an emotional level for most Americans, at least those who are contacting CNN, is to sort of strengthen their resolve to want to carry on some sort of campaign against terrorists.
Ron, what about you? Was there a skeptical part of your expertise that wanted to know whether or not the tape was leaked on purpose to CNN, either from Al-Qaeda or from Western intelligence agencies that are interested in having it put on American TV?
No, definitely not. It was not leaked by any organization to CNN because I also debriefed the correspondent who managed to recover this cache of tapes. And also examining these tapes, my own feeling is that Al-Qaeda would have never allowed these tapes to go into the hands of an intelligence organization or a media organization, because the recovery of these tapes by non-Al-Qaeda people exposes Al-Qaeda ideology, Al-Qaeda modus operandi, Al-Qaeda tactics targeting Al-Qaeda intentions, Al-Qaeda plans and preparations. And this is what Al-Qaeda wants to keep secret. And I believe that the recovery of these tapes has really compromised Al-Qaeda. It compromises, it exposes the identity of so many important Al-Qaeda members. Now we know much more about Al-Qaeda.
Do you mean the identity of actual people, or do you mean that it has exposed knowledge that we didn't know they had?
Both the knowledge as well as individuals. For instance, the tape where they are training people to make TNT, basically the chemicals they are using, you could buy it from any pharmacy, chemist shop, and hardware store. So basically the new generation of Al-Qaeda recruits who are going to come out of Afghanistan, who are going to come out of other conflict zones where Al-Qaeda is having a presence, these operatives will be able just to buy the material to make towards making a bomb from shops and hardware stores, pharmacies, and chemist shops, and manufacture the device. They will carry all the knowledge they have in their head. They will not carry any explosives. So I think practices like that has now been exposed because of the recovery of these tapes. Also, we know that Al-Qaeda seriously worked towards developing chemical capability, CBRN capability, and they've experimented with cyanide gases with the specific intention of using it against human beings. And the exposure of this tape will definitely give us the opportunities to be more alert, to develop certain countermeasures, and even try to control the availability of certain chemical agents that could be used by groups like Al-Qaeda and by Al-Qaeda to attack society.
So, Jim, when we go through the list of what the experts have had to say about that first round of tapes, the ones that where the dogs are apparently being gassed, some are saying it looks like a nerve agent like sarin gas. So others are saying, no, it looks more like the effects of cyanide. And others are saying, I don't actually think it looks like either. So where are we left then?
Well, without actually being able to examine the forensic evidence and look at the dog, it's hard to know precisely what was done. But we still learn a lot from that tape. If you watch it slowly, you'll see that there are operatives that cross in front of the camera. At least two different operatives cross in front of the camera. They are not wearing protective clothing. One of them is wearing sandals. This is not a facility that is airtight. There's sunlight leaking through. You can hear a door open and close in the background. The place looks like hell. I mean, it doesn't look like a very neat laboratory. My kitchen looks better than this laboratory. And essentially what happens is an operative goes over and dumps some things on the floor and then walks away, right? It's not an enclosed area. Hurries out of the way. And then slowly over time, the chemicals begin to mix, give off a white vapor. And then again, over time, the dog succumbs, it appears, although even that we're not, don't know for sure. But what I take away from this is that it's clear evidence of interest in chemical weapons. In fact, it's the first direct evidence. We've had some testimony that implied that, some other intelligence that implied interest in chem weapons. Bin Laden himself in a November interview with a Pakistani journalist claimed to have chem weapons. But this is the first direct evidence we have of it. But it's evidence only of interest. It's not evidence of a real capability to weaponize, to take the raw agents that make up chemical weapons and turn them into a deadly instrument. That capability remains to be demonstrated, I think.
And so what does that tell us? Where do we go from there if all we're looking at is interest? Because that was relatively well placed on the record, I think, in picking through the remains of some of the burned-out camps some months ago. It was also CNN that came up with documentation that seemed to indicate that they were noodling around with whatever the ingredients would be for a nerve agent.
That's right. That's reference to there the Encyclopedia of Jihad or Afghanistan Jihad. There was a section on chemical weapons that included a formula for sarin gas, if memory serves me right. But in the same way that encyclopedia is helpful, these tapes are helpful, and let me explain why. That encyclopedia that we found back in the fall was 12 volumes. Only one small part of it dealt with chemical weapons, just a few pages. The bulk of that 12-volume set, or however many volumes it was, dealt with conventional explosives, TNT, truck bombs, that sort of thing. As we go through these tapes, if we find that there's only a few minutes that deal with chemical weapons, but that the bulk of the tapes are focused on TNT or sort of bread and butter tactics of your average terrorist, then that tells us something about where these different options rank in terms of Al-Qaeda's priorities. Where do they spend their R&D money? Where do they spend their organizational resources? Where do they spend their training time? If they spend it all on, or the majority of it on, conventional attacks using conventional weapons, that tells us something about the organization. Now, having said that, I don't mean to say we shouldn't worry about it. There may be an Al-Qaeda in the future that may be more sophisticated and may want to use those weapons. So it's a wake-up call and a warning to us.
It's a good point that Jim makes, that what we're looking at are videos that could be a year, two, up to 10 years old. Connection listeners, we're talking about the what we are to learn from CNN's videos, which are coming out this week. They have from an Al-Qaeda cache they found in Afghanistan and what does it tell us about the terrorist threat? How does it change our attitude? 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. We invite you into the conversation. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. And from the recent discovery of Al-Qaeda videotapes brought to us by CNN, this is the voice of Osama bin Laden.
Bin Laden is about to declare war on America.
By God's grace, we have formed with many other Islamic groups and organizations in the Islamic world a front called the International Islamic Front, to do jihad against the crusaders and Jews.
Of all the Al-Qaeda tapes CNN obtained, this stands out. A record of an event the terrorist leader saw as history in the making for Al-Qaeda.
British voice we're listening to, that of Nick Robertson, senior international correspondent for CNN, who was the one who brought the tapes out of Iraq. That's the subject of our hour today. With me in the studio, Jim Walsh. He is, out of Afghanistan. With me in the studio, Jim Walsh, a research fellow in the International Security Program at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. Rohan Gunaratne is author of Inside Al-Qaeda, Global Network of Terror. And joining us on the line, Judith Miller, senior writer with the New York Times and also author of a number of books, her most recent, Germs, Biological Weapons, and America's Secret War. Judith, as we were talking a little bit earlier in the program before you joined us, the question Jim raised is, how do we see these latest reports of Al-Qaeda's interest in chemical weapons in a larger picture of the use of chemical weapons? We know Saddam Hussein has used these weapons in the past. There are reports today in the paper of Al-Qaeda reorganizing in Afghanistan, of an associate group in Iraq, which apparently has also been experimenting with chemical weapons. Is it too early to start connecting these disparate stories?
Well, I think, you know, you kind of have to connect these stories because the threat that Al-Qaeda posed is certainly lessened. It's diminished, but it is still there. And one can't help but kind of attempt to connect the remaining dots, as it were. There's nothing that we know about Al-Qaeda in terms of its ideology or its tactics that would lead one to suggest that it has abandoned its goals just because it's been kicked out of Afghanistan. Wherever it is, in whatever shape it finds itself, it will attempt to regroup. Its members will attempt to continue to pursue their objectives. So, yes, one has to be concerned. But it's important to remember that they have lost a crucial base of operations, which is Afghanistan. That's going to weaken them a lot.
And when you watch the tapes, Judith, as we are you seeing anything about Al-Qaeda's capabilities which were, prior to this, just something you were suspecting? Do you see something new in the tapes?
Well, what I saw was a demonstration of their ability to kill an animal with at least one form of agent, and perhaps more than one. They killed, looks like they killed, we're not absolutely certain the dogs were dead as opposed to in a deep sleep. The experts disagree, but it looks like they were able to kill at least three Labrador-like puppies using an agent in one form. It was in a liquid with an oozing vapor out of it. In the second, it was just a mist. In the third, it was in a small box. But, you know, the dogs look dead to the lay observer, that is me. And I think you have to take stock of that. I mean, intelligence community estimates said for a long time that Al-Qaeda was experimenting with crude chemical and even biological weapons. This is a demonstration of that ability, that they were able to kill things. That automatically has to give us pause. On the other hand, it doesn't change the underlying assessment, which is that they had that capability a while ago. This is just a very graphic and chilling demonstration of that fact.
And Jim Walsh, it's what you were talking about earlier when you said that terrorism is not so much about necessarily killing as the ability to strike fear into people, that such killing could take place.
Well, I'm sure that people saw that film yesterday and reacted very emotionally, as did I when I first saw it. It is chilling and despicable. One of the things that makes me feel a little bit better about it, though, if that's possible, is that I think of these things as being on a continuum, a spectrum. And so at one end of the spectrum, there are the chemical weapons that the U.S. made during the Cold War, highly sophisticated munitions intended to kill a lot of people when we were in fierce rivalry with the Soviet Union.
Highly sophisticated delivery systems.
Exactly. Too. Exactly. Most importantly, that. And then on the other end of the spectrum is someone who goes out and poisons a dog. So, you know, from the very crude, from someone who just puts strychnine in meat to the U.S. Chemical munitions, you've got a wide range here. Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda is somewhere in between there, and I think they're actually probably closer to the guy who poisons a dog than they are a U.S. chemical weapon. Still, I want to emphasize that even though I have a rather skeptical assessment of their ability to carry out large-scale chemical attacks that, in a successful way. I think that we should be concerned about seeing this, just as Judith has indicated, just because Al-Qaeda today, Al-Qaeda 02, lacks perhaps the technical sophistication to be able to carry out WMD attacks doesn't mean that some other version of Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda 05 or some other group further down the line, won't be able to acquire that. And so I think it's worth paying attention to, but that we shouldn't expect a big chem attack tomorrow.
Just a quick comment, Rohan, if I can get one from you, on what we know about the status of Al-Qaeda now. In particular, reflecting on the remarks this morning of Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf saying he has reason to believe they are currently reorganizing inside Afghanistan.
What has happened to Al-Qaeda since U.S. troops went in to Afghanistan is that its infrastructure, training and operational infrastructure has suffered extensively. But what we are seeing is that the core and the penultimate leadership of Al-Qaeda has been intact. And as long as the leadership of a terrorist group survives, and as long as the Islamist milieu is robust, Al-Qaeda is able to replenish its human losses and its material wastage. So what we are seeing is because of the failure of the U.S. Troops to take out the leadership of Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda has been able to survive in the Afghan-Pakistan border. But other than that, the Al-Qaeda global network, the horizontal network outside Afghanistan, has suffered in certain parts of the world. But in certain countries, in certain areas, this network is still very much intact. So Al-Qaeda has suffered. But because Al-Qaeda ideology has not been disrupted, Al-Qaeda has been able to make a slow comeback.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to Medway, Massachusetts. Paul's on the line. Hello, Paul.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
You're very welcome. I have two comments to make. The first one is that I think it's great that CNN was able to get these tapes, but I think it also reflects a complete and total failure of U.S. intelligence and U.S. forces to be able to secure them before CNN did. I would really like to hear comments from your guests regarding that, because I think there
Paul,
was a
Paul, just before I do that, let me ask you why, in your mind, it makes such a difference. I mean, if CNN is saying that they will provide copies of the tapes to U.S. intelligence agencies and other Western intelligence agencies, what's the big difference if they go first into the hands of CNN instead of the CIA?
The difference is as follows, in my opinion. I think 9/11 was a failure of the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, to really do a good job of coordinating their efforts on behalf of the American people. And I think that there still seems to be a weakness in the intelligence community in gathering information necessary to prevent 9/11 activities. I'd also like, one of your guests said that Al-Qaeda lacks a substantial amount of sophistication. They had enough sophistication to hijack 4 planes which killed a tremendous number of people, hurt America in a variety of different ways. So I don't think it's sophistication that I'm concerned about. It's the intent and the ability of America to try and do its best job in preventing these kinds of attacks. And I think CNN's ability to get them demonstrates good journalism, but it also reflects a failure on the part of the intelligence community to gather appropriate information.
Judith Miller, do you see it as a failure in the Western intelligence agencies that CNN got the tapes before anyone else?
Well, of course. I mean, I think your listener is absolutely right. As when I asked the CIA about that, they came back with a kind of flip response. Well, they said there are more CNN correspondents in Afghanistan than there are CIA agents, and they're paid better. Well, you know, if both are true, I think it reflects part of the problem. you know, where are we in terms of our intelligence capabilities? It's interesting to me that if the Department of Homeland Defense, the whole kind of grand reorganization of these boxes, maybe it's justified, maybe it's not. The one untouched area really is intelligence, which I agree with your listener was one of the major failures of that led to September 11th, the inability, the weakness in that area. And I also agree, by the way, on the sophisticated argument. You know, if we've learned anything from the anthrax attacks that may or may not have been related to 9/11, it's that you don't have to be very, quote, sophisticated in your delivery mechanism. Who would have thought that a letter could be turned into a lethal weapon any more than a plane, one of our own planes, could have been diverted and turned into a lethal weapon against us? What they have that's more important than sophistication, or perhaps I should say as important, is imagination. And that is sorely lacking in the U.S. intelligence community and the people charged with conducting this fight. So, bravo, listener, I have to agree with you.
Briefly, Jim?
Yeah, I agree that it is somewhat troubling that the tapes came from the CNN and not intelligence, although it's not clear that perhaps they didn't play a role. There are at least some speculation that this finding of the cache of tapes was facilitated by others. So we can't rule that out as a possibility. But as to the point about...
Speculation by whom? CNN totally denies that.
Right.
And, we actually have CNN senior national correspondent Mike Boettcher on the line with us. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
This question about whether or not your news agency was in some way led to the tapes, that someone made it easy for you to find them because they have particular value being screened on American television. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I can tell you, you know, my direct conversations with Nick. I mean, basically what I've been doing since the tapes were uncovered is traveling several thousand miles for the last 10 days, having sources of mine look at these and analyze them. And, I mean, I've had long discussions with Nick. Nick knew this person over a period of time way before this and before 9/11. Nick's been working in Afghanistan since 96 and has good contacts there. And, I mean, Nick knew particulars about this person who had the videotapes. And this person was not working for any agency or releasing that with any other agenda that we know of.
And what does CNN do with the tapes at this point? Have copies been provided to Western intelligence agencies? Again, I guess we should be talking
well,
about...
CNN's position is that the tapes, since the airing, have been provided to the appropriate authorities because the CNN feels a responsibility that these could impact the security of people around the world.
So you mean the whole tapes or just what was aired on television are being handed over to these agencies?
I believe it's just what's been aired on television, but what CNN is going to be airing, and I'll have to get clarification on that because that's frankly not my department, but I mean, frankly, over 5 days, we're going to be airing every relevant bit of video we have. We're not holding anything back. I mean, anything we don't air wouldn't be very relevant.
Just well, one before you go.
Go ahead, Judith.
Go ahead.
I just wondered, I thought that there was some footage that you were not going to put on the air simply because it's too graphic. The material that came from Chechnya and Bosnia that shows Russians being killed in a very, very horrible way.
Judy is absolutely right. And Judy is always absolutely right.
No. Judy is often wrong.
No. There is a segment of that was provided by a cell supportive of Al-Qaeda in Chechnya, where a head rolls down a hillside. You see, it was a pre-produced tape rather than a what we call in the business a raw tape. And it was a tape of various clips that they'd obviously sent to Afghanistan to show what they were doing. It showed a blade, machete kind of wiped over the face of a person taunting him. But what you will not see is a head rolling down a hillside.
Mike, just one last quick question about the tapes. The numbers. There were apparently 250. Nick apparently brought back 64, 65.
Yeah.
What about all the others?
Well, Nick, you know, Nick made his long, perilous drive to get those tapes and went down there and viewed them. And Nick says that of the other tapes that were not taken, that those tapes were mainly air checks or recordings of CNN off air, BBC, World, Al Jazeera, talking about news items that were of particular interest to Al-Qaeda.
Mike, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Rohan Gunaratne, quickly to you, just on one of the points that Mike raised about the these videos that have come from Chechnya and other places. Is there a part of the story there that where you're learning something about the links of Al-Qaeda to other Islamic militant organizations around the world?
What is significant about the videos is that there are videos from Myanmar, because Al-Qaeda has provided some training to the Rohingya Muslims there. There's videos from Bosnia, because a number of Al-Qaeda fighters served in Bosnia. There are videos from Chechnya, because Al-Ansar Mujahideen, headed by Khattab, worked very closely with Al-Qaeda, and Khattab was a protege of Osama bin Laden. Videos from Sudan, because Al-Qaeda was based in Sudan until May 1996. There are videos from Islamists in Libya, because of the close connections between the Libyan Islamist freedom fighters with Al-Qaeda. So basically, wherever Al-Qaeda has participated in various campaigns by providing direct assistance to various Islamist groups, the videos that were recovered from Afghanistan, it has at least one video from one of those conflicts. So naturally, this collection enhances our understanding of Al-Qaeda's links to the various regional theaters where Al-Qaeda has supported, either by sending trained fighters or by sending assistance.
Rohan, I have to interrupt you there to say goodbye to Judith Miller. Thanks for being with us, Judith.
Thank you.
Earlier, we were talking with Mike Boettcher, CNN senior national correspondent. And Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. Your calls when we come back after the break. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Connection listeners, what lessons do we take from the Al-Qaeda videotapes that are being screened day by day this week on CNN? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. With me on the program today, Rohan Gunaratne. He's a research fellow at the Center for the Study of Terrorism and Political Violence at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. His most recent book is Inside Al-Qaeda, Global Network of Terror. Jim Walsh is also with us. He's a research fellow at the International Security Program at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. We're going to Staten Island, New York. Ed is on the line. Hello, Ed.
Hi, how are you? I'm on vacation now, so I haven't seen the tapes. But from the way it's described to me, and from hearing news items such as the fact that, which has been specified, that Al-Qaeda is engaged in chemical weapons development in northern Iraq. You know, I'm a New York City police officer, and I've worked in Ground Zero for 8 months. So, you know, when I hear September 11th thrown around, I really get kind of discouraged, because I hear so much about Al-Qaeda and Afghanistan, when then I look upon 18 of these terrorists who were actually involved in the hijackings were from Saudi Arabia. And I just wonder what the draw to Afghanistan really is. Now, to look at this upon what I hear in Iraq, with the Bush administration for several weeks now obviously hyping a war in Iraq, doesn't anybody question the Bush family's economic interest in raising oil prices, you know, by further destabilization of that area where we get our oil from?
Let's take it one step at a time, if we can. Ed, I want to ask Rohan to address the first part of your question about the focus on Afghanistan. Rohan, I mean, that's in a simple terms where all the training was taking place, no?
Yes, Al-Qaeda is, however, a global terrorist network. Al-Qaeda has recruited from at least 40 different nationalities, and Al-Qaeda has a presence in 94 different countries. And what we are seeing is to fight a terrorist organization like Al-Qaeda, which is a multinational terrorist organization, you need a multi-pronged, multi-dimensional, multi-agency, and a multinational response. So destroying infrastructure, Al-Qaeda infrastructure in Afghanistan itself is not enough.
Okay, but it's important to point out that these tapes all predate September 11th, or most of them. There are a couple which indicate that they may have been shot just in the days afterwards. But, I mean, Ed's leading us to an understanding of what Al-Qaeda is today as opposed to what Al-Qaeda was before. And are we in a position to make any sensible judgment about that?
Yes, from the tapes, we can definitely say that Al-Qaeda is not one single organization, but an organization of organizations, because at least 50% of the tapes were from various regional conflicts. There were some from the Islamist groups in Kurdistan, some from Chechnya, others from Bosnia, others from Algeria, from various countries in Southeast Asia and South Asia. So it shows that Al-Qaeda is not only operating in Afghanistan, but Al-Qaeda has a global presence, and that is a clear message this collection of tapes provide us with.
Rohan's made an important point here about Al-Qaeda being a global organization, in some ways unique in the annals of terrorism, and has documented in his excellent book their ability to react and adapt. But I think it's also important that we don't miss the significance of destroying the camps in Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda will adapt and react and still mount operations against the U.S. and U.S. assets abroad. But a terrorist group enjoys a huge advantage when it has the overt support of a government that can provide protection for it, so that you can set up laboratories, you can set up things in place to develop new weapons and new attacks. If you're on the run and if you're moving from place to place and you're under a lot of pressure and you're working in a cell structure where people don't know the other people in other cells, it makes it more difficult to launch complex and particularly technologically complex or attacks. That doesn't mean they're not going to be in the game. They're going to be in the game. They're going to hit us again. I think we all know that.
Okay,
but it does hurt them.
The fact that CNN was able to put its hands on what Rohan has called the record library of Osama bin Laden, does that say to you, Jim, that this is an organization that is scrambling to find a new base, that under any set of ideal circumstances, those tapes never would have been found?
I think that that's right. They're under a tremendous amount of pressure right now. The whole world is looking for them. The U.S. military and intelligence operatives are all around the world looking for them. Again, yesterday's news about Abu Nidal reminds us that a terrorist can last a long time. They can survive for decades even after they do most of their dirty work. But surviving and growing stronger are two different things. I think Rohan is right to say that the ideological attraction is still there, and they're certainly going to be out recruiting. But as long as they have to move from place to place to place, it does put pressure on it. It makes it more difficult for them.
All right, Ed, thanks for your call. To Natick, Massachusetts now. Mary's on the line. Hi, Mary.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling, I guess, to make a comment. I have just gotten back from vacation and heard about these tapes, and I am glad that CNN has gotten this information. I think that if the government had gotten it, we may never see the kind of things that are going on out there.
Jim's nodding his head. Do you think that's accurate?
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. I felt incredibly frustrated over this past several months, because really the flow of information has all but dried up. We were starting to talk about the tapes earlier and their origin, and what I was going to say, didn't get a chance to say, is I thought it was great that CNN got them first, because if they hadn't gotten them first, I think the caller is right, we never would have seen them. They would have been carted up, boxed, gone off to a Pentagon storage facility, been analyzed, classified, and wouldn't have seen the light of day except for maybe a Freedom of Information Act request or something 20 years down the line. If scholars, if the public, if journalists are going to be able to do their job of collecting information, understanding al-Qaeda, and therefore being able to respond to the threat it poses, we have to have information in the public domain. So I couldn't be happier that CNN found these tapes, and I hope after giving them to authorities, they'll give a copy to Harvard or give a copy to another academic institution so that we can begin to study them and have graduate students study them and really make the most of them that we can.
I wonder, Mary, if there isn't, though, in that delight that you have in your mind that CNN got the tapes, also a little bit of despair that, you know, we're talking about U.S. intelligence agencies which failed to warn this country about September 11th, despite increasing or growing evidence that, that the information was there. And you look at it from one perspective, and not much has changed.
Well, I won't trust the government again, you know, and I will take it from the news agencies. So my confidence in the government is shattered.
Mary, thanks for your call.
Okay, thanks.
1-800-423-8255 to join us. And to Jeffersonville, Indiana, Kathy is on the line. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Yes, my comment was showing these tapes, you know, on CNN, that what makes you think that these operatives that are unknown around the world are not getting messages from them?
You mean coded messages in the videotape?
Right, or training or whatever.
Rohan, is there any indication that al-Qaeda has tried to do this in the past? I know there was some speculation about it in the days shortly after September 11th when the first bin Laden type sort of press conference video tape came out. What's your sense about Kathy's question?
Well, it is possible, but in this case, I can tell you for certain that there was no coded messages at all, because I examined each of these videos, and I can tell you that it was recovered by CNN, and there was no intelligence agency involved, and definitely this video collection was dumped by al-Qaeda, and so that they could recover it at a future date, and that this collection, the time span of these videos would have been at least 10 years, because there are videos that are more recent videos as well as videos that goes back to the 1990s. And we have not come across a single case where al-Qaeda has tried to pass messages to its operatives through videos or through other means of making such tapes available to media organizations. There has been a lot of speculation, but there has been no evidence whatsoever.
Kathy, I think if they were trying to communicate to their operatives, what would have happened is al-Qaeda would have released a single tape. They wouldn't have released 251 tapes, of which only 64 were taken, of which only parts of the 64 were going to get played. In other words, that would have been a very inefficient way to try to communicate, because they wouldn't have had a guarantee that the tape with the message would have gotten played on the air. So I think it's unlikely that these tapes were really being used for that purpose.
Well, just like you said, that it showed how to make dynamite using hardware stores, stuff available through hardware stores and pharmacies. I mean, and maybe they're not coded, maybe they're just straightforward.
Yeah, there's an argument here that these are really sort of correspondence courses. They're how-to video guides for the would-be terrorist that allows al-Qaeda to conduct some of its training off-site, so to speak.
So if they show these tapes, wouldn't that be training them?
It would be training. It wouldn't be an encoded message. It wouldn't be a secret message that was tipping off an al-Qaeda cell in Germany to go commit a particular bombing. But it would be more of an overt attempt to train operatives who were sympathetic to al-Qaeda's cause.
And I'm not sitting on the CNN editorial board deciding what's going to be shown, Kathy, but I'm sure they're not going to show the 3 hours of how to make TNT from stuff off the drugstore.
But that'd be good. But, sales. You know, I just want to bring that point up.
Yeah, no, I thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Rohan, in your review of the tapes, was there anything that indicated to you that you might have been looking at master tapes from which copies were meant to be made or had been made, or whether or not you were looking at copies? If they are, in fact, video courses in terrorism, what do we know about how widely they may have been distributed?
What I can tell you is that the training tapes, such as to make TNT, from commercially available material, and also the training tape where they show how to use a surface-to-air missile. I think that those two tapes, and also there's another tape where they show how to conduct assassination, how to conduct a bombing, how to conduct an ambush. Now, those tapes, I believe that those tapes were made not only for training inside Afghanistan, but also to train other groups operating in the Philippines, in Indonesia, in Myanmar, in Algeria, in Chechnya, and so on and so forth. Now, I think that those tapes are very valuable for Al-Qaeda and associate groups of Al-Qaeda because of the destruction of the Al-Qaeda infrastructure in Afghanistan. So the critical knowledge that Al-Qaeda has is being passed over to those regional theaters where ultimately Al-Qaeda will survive.
Jim, we began the program with a quote from the Democratic Congressman Tom Lantos saying that it is so important Americans be reminded on a regular basis that the terrorists are still around, still have the power. In your view, is there some kind of balance that needs to be achieved beyond the reminder and ramping it up to a point where fear is created about the strength or the power of the organization, which perhaps is beyond the strength and power of that organization?
Well, I am concerned about the hype that's often associated with some of these tapes. I think, let's face it, Al-Qaeda is dangerous, it's murderous, and it's put its sights on the U.S. Now, the question is, what's the best way for us to respond? If we mischaracterize them and say that they're really good in some areas when they're not so good, then we're going to come up with the wrong sets of remedies and solutions. So we need an objective assessment of their strengths and their weaknesses. And we need to defend ourselves against their strengths, and we need to attack their weaknesses. I think it is a sophisticated group organizationally, something that Rohan has documented at length, whereas it has other sorts of weaknesses because it has to work in a cell structure, because it doesn't have the technical and scientific training that others have. So I think we need to be reminded, and that the reminder is a good one, but only if we then take that reminder and act on it. So, for example, it's no good to be reminded of the specter of weapons of mass destruction if we then don't go out and protect nuclear materials, do a better job of protecting biological materials, and taking the steps to prevent those terrorists from acting on their intentions.
Thanks for being part of the program today, Jim.
Thank you, Dick.
Jim Walsh is an expert on chemical and biological weapons at Harvard's DFK School of Government. Rohan, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Rohan Gunaratne is the author of Inside Al-Qaeda, Global Network of Terror. Earlier in the program, we spoke with Judith Miller. She's a reporter for The New York Times, and Mike Betcher, senior national correspondent for CNN. You can continue this conversation. Find us at our website. We're at theconnection.org. Graham Smith's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the